Ananian.
Something I've incorporated into the repair process at the shop in the last, gosh, it's got to be 8 or 9 years now, is when we scan for codes, we scan everything.
The Car Doctor.
Will a thermostat cause bad, poor engine heat or low engine heat? Absolutely. Will a blend door actuator or a temp door actuator cause low engine heat? Absolutely. Which problem's bad? They're both bad.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Hey, welcome aboard, and thanks for stopping by the garage today. I am Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. I'm here to help solve your car problem, whatever it might be. Let's kick the garage doors open right out of the gate because we've got a busy show this hour, as always. Let's go over to Craig in Maine with a couple of questions. Craig, welcome aboard, sir. Welcome to the Car Doctor. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, Ron. Thanks for taking my call.
What's going on? How can I help you today?
Well, I got a 2017 GMC Savannah 2500. It's got the 4.8 in it.
Right.
About 64,000 miles, and I own a seasonal business. So during the winter months, the summer months, I'm going to do some regular maintenance to it. You know, the oil change, plugs and wires, the front pads and rotors. But I listen to your show quite a bit on podcast, and you talk about when to be in control of the repair.
Yep.
So it got me thinking about my starter. Now, I turn this van off and start it sometimes 20 times a day. And I'm wondering if, you know, there's a limit, a wear out period of the starter.
You ever look at those UPS trucks?
Yes.
You want one. That's not what I'm asking you that for. Okay. But you ever look at like the UPS or delivery trucks? You ever talk to those mechanics? They're like really interesting guys to talk to. You know, they've got it plotted out what the life expectancy is of the majority of the components. So the starter, the alternator, the fuel pumps, and they know it's so many life cycles. All right. So they start doing the math. And the only reason I bring all this up is I used to do a lot of landscaper trucks, you know, for the local guys in the area. And,
yeah. Kind of the same idea.
And I couldn't get over how this one guy, Dave, he would go through a starter every 2 years. And one day I realized Dave and I sat down. He was starting his truck 32 times a day, times 6 days, times 7 months. Do the math. And, you know, it just beat it up. He was always beating up the drive. He was always beating up the armatures. He was just hard on starters. And, you know, I only realized this after we kind of went through the venue of, you know, who's got the better, best starter in the world, and nothing. Dave could kill anything in two and a half years, done. Didn't matter what we put in the truck.
Exactly.
And, you know, we started pulling starters out at the 2 year mark instead of 2.5, and he never got stuck. And then one day I took it apart and I could see the damage happening. So yeah, I think you're on track. I don't know that this is the moment. It may be too soon, but I think what I would do, because it's a seasonal business and obviously you depend on your truck. You can hear Lucy in the background. Lucy's sleeping at my feet today, the studio pit bull. And she's waking up. And I would probably pull the starter. Do you have a local starter rebuilder in the area?
Yeah, there is somebody in the area.
You know, somebody you trust. You know,
alternators and starters.
Yeah, take that starter out. Take it down to him and say, listen, I'd like you to consider rebuilding this. Tell him what you're doing. Or maybe go down and talk to him beforehand and say, hey, you know, what's the life cycle? How long do these starters last? How many turns? You know, what's expected mileage? You know, the average person starts their car, I think, something like 3 to 5 times a day. Five days a week is the number I always heard. So, you know, you've got to do their math versus your math. Because I will tell you this, that starter is in a tight spot. It's right. Have you looked at this, trying to get this out?
I haven't looked at it yet. It was just a thought that I had.
Yeah. And it's you know, and maybe you want to do it now in the off time. Maybe at the very least, go talk to the starter guy and say, hey, listen, if I bring you this starter, can you tell me what kind of shape it's in? If he takes it apart, cleans it up, puts it together and says, hey, Craig, you know, there's 50% starter here, great, I'll wait another 2 years. But right. if he tells you, listen, you're two-thirds of the way done, let him rebuild that one, buy one of his rebuilds, keep one as a spare, you got it at the shop. If it ever goes bad, you got it for the price of a starter. What's the value of that starter to your business if the vehicle goes down?
Well, exactly.
Right? And then you right. can then you can change it on your time. So if you can't control the failure, you can at least control the clock because at least you have parts.
Right.
You know?
So you would say, like, have somebody rebuild it versus just go out to my local parts and get a...
Yeah,
because we all know what new means.
Well, yeah, and then
be in the same spot,
right? And you know, it's news never ever worked. And then whose brand? And you know, we just finished doing the engine in Danny's Z28 that Danny learned the hard way. You can't run a Z28 up past $5,000. You know, trying to tell the kid with the Porsche who's got the bigger car. So yeah, you got to let kids go through these lessons. And we pulled his starter motor out, which was original to the Z28. With 87,000 miles on it. The car had been sitting since 94. We cleaned it up. The brushes were only half gone. We cleaned it up, you know, emeried the armature a little bit, put it together, done, down the road. And you know, it works great. You know, and sometimes that's the best way to do it. So, yeah, that's what I would do. I would start with talking to the rebuilder and then ask him when he rebuilds, where's he getting his parts from? Are they offshore? Are they local? Are they... not U.S. made, but of good quality that at least he knows they work, which I imagine they do, the guys in business. You know, but that would make sense to me. You got to control the repair, especially for something you're counting on a regular basis.
Right. And the starter rebuild guy would probably have an idea of how often he rebuilds this kind of starter on this vehicle.
Correct. Yeah.
As well.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. So, second question.
Okay.
You said you had
two. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yes. So, I bought a 2016 GMC Sierra 1500. It's got the 5.3, 74,000 miles. I bought it last year, and after a couple months, I realized that it had the active fuel management system.
Right.
I didn't know it had it when I bought it. I didn't really think about it. But when I was driving down the road, a straight road, about 35 miles an hour, all of a sudden the truck would just have a small vibration, and it was, you know, everywhere in the wheel, the seat, the console. And when I would accelerate it slightly, I don't know if it was the shifting from cylinders or downshifting, it would have a fairly hard shift. So I did some research. I found out I had the active fuel management, and I found a product that a module you plug into the ODB2.
Right, to disable
that stops it,
it
from
yeah,
correct.
Right.
Yep. So now it's in VA mode all the time, and it's beautiful. I have no issues.
Okay.
My question is, am I going to have a problem because GM engineered it to go back and forth?
No, I don't think so.
I
don't think so. I don't think that's. I think the engine's going to work harder all the time. You know, and I would say this to you, and it's probably not necessary, but just I would stay on top of my oil changes.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're probably, what am I saying? You're probably, of course you're using synthetic oil. A guy like you is going to use the best. And
well, it's kind of funny. When I first changed the oil in it, I went in and bought the oil and filter, and I got 6 quarts.
Right.
And I changed it. And then I realized it took 8 quarts. And so I went back in and I said, did you know this vehicle took 8 quarts? And it said, yes. I said, why didn't you sell me 8 quarts?
Oh, you listen, are you trying to ask for common sense? Will you cut this out? You know, if the government hears about you, they may sterilize you or something, because common sense doesn't exist on the planet anymore.
Very true.
I all kidding around aside, I would, as long as the product has good reviews, you're looking on forums, you don't see where anybody's saying, well, I left it hooked up. I'm not so worried about the engine in V8 mode all the time. I'm more worried about, does it have an alternate effect on emission controls and the way the vehicle's operating? I would want to do, now here's the catch, right? You can't look at fuel trim. You can't look at anything with this tchotchke on the end of the OBD2 plug because you can't put the scan tool in it.
Right.
Right. So, you know, what do you do? As long as you don't see fuel economy falling off, as long as the truck runs well, as long as you don't see tailpipe color change like it's running too rich or it's having a performance issue, I wouldn't worry about it. I would, my barometers, my takeaway here is my barometers are going to be the color of the oil, all right? What does the oil look like coming out? Does it look like it's working hard? A car guy knows what I mean by that, or a car person. Yeah. Got to be gender correct today. And, you know, I'd be okay with it. And, you know, I would also just ask the tchotchke maker, listen, you know, is there a downside? What's the liability? What has been your experience? Put it back on them. You know, because it's a valid question. I don't think you're going to have an issue. If you were a heavy-footed driver, the vehicle would be in V8 mode all the time anyway.
And I typically am, so.
Right. So, you know, I don't see it as an issue. I think that in a lot of ways, all this, well, that's a whole conversation for another day when we have more time, but this whole thing about, you know, V8 mode and four-cylinder mode and all the problems they've all had with this, it's it leaves a lot to be desired. So you truck on up and you do what you're doing, Craig, and if you have any more questions, you know where to find me, all right?
Sounds good. I appreciate your time.
I appreciate you being here, Craig. Thank you very much. I'm Ron Ananian, the car doctor. You're very welcome. We'll be back right after this. Don't call us.
That's right. If you call and we're not live, you can leave a message and we'll call you back to get you on the air with Ron. 855-560-9900. Speaking of Ron, here he is.
Welcome back. Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor at your service. Next up, Nick from Maine. Nick, welcome aboard, sir. Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor at your service. How can I help?
Hey, Ron. I love the show.
Thank you, sir.
I have a question about motor oil. What's your opinion on using diesel motor oil and a gas engine, such as like Shell Rotella T6. I've heard of people using those in dirt bikes, lawnmowers, four-wheelers, motorcycles. I'm just wondering if I could use that in my car. I have a 2002 Chevy Prism. I'm just curious on what you think.
Why? Is my question. For all the and there's a reason I'm asking that, Nick. For all the choices of motor oils, you know, are we trying to hide or solve a problem, or you just want to use that oil for whatever reason?
Well, I heard that it has a higher zinc in it.
Okay.
And I guess that's a better, it keeps the parts from wearing out.
So, all right. So let's talk about the zinc thing. All right. See, there's always a reason, right, why all this comes about. So, zinc was taken out of motor oils. You know, I've lost track now. How many years am I on radio? How long have catalytic converters been on cars? And, you know, zinc was taken out because zinc damages catalytic converters. It causes issues. And they've made motor oils without zinc because of that. So, you know, your vehicle's a 2002. Obviously, it's got a cat. It should have a cat on it. To put a zinc-based oil or a zinc-content oil in that vehicle, you know, over the long haul, theoretically, a theoretical conversation, you're going to do more harm than good. All right?
Yeah.
So have you owned the car since new, or is this the beater you picked up recently just to get back and forth to work?
It's a beater. It's got 217,000 miles on it.
Right.
And barely broken in because it's a Toyota.
Right. Yep.
And I don't know. Like, I understand the catalytic converter thing, but if it's not burning oil, but how does the zinc get to the catch if it's not being burned?
Well, the argument becomes that the zinc contaminates through the combustion process because a certain amount of oil comes out through the exhaust in the form of residue. That's the argument the engineers give. Do you know why they don't lube brake pads on new vehicles out of the dealership?
I have no idea.
Okay. If you ever notice, like, you know, very, very rare is it where a new vehicle will have lubricant on the brake pad slides. And sometimes you end up taking it back to the dealer because the brakes clank or click or they make noise and then they lube them and all of a sudden it goes away.
Right.
Because the aromatic of the lubricant, usually silicon-based, the aromatic of the lubricant gets into the paint when you paint the car in the paint booth.
Oh.
That's how, and my point is, that's how precise all of this is. Okay? Mm-hmm. So they account for everything. You know, to you and me, We just think a car is a car. To them, it's a transportation device. And every molecule of energy, every molecule of chemical, everything that's put into it is accounted for from birth to death. And they've got to know where it's going. If it were me, all right, and you know, you want to keep the beater going, so to speak, I would just, you know, Nick, I would stay with whatever viscosity the vehicle's rated for. I'm guessing 530. Is it it's a 530 car? I would be I'd be running 530 if it tolerates 530 synthetic. If you want to, and one of the things I would worry about is because it's an older vehicle, there is an argument to be made here for what they classify as high mileage oils. All right.
Yes.
Because, and the advantage of, and you can, there's some really great reading out at Castrol.com. You know, Castrol, I think, was the inventor of the category of high mileage oils. You can go out to Castrol.com, read about it. But the advantage of a high mileage oil is it's got specific additives because, again, right, from birth to death, from cradle to grave of the vehicle, they know what sort of toxins might get past rings or might cause issues, might become a problem for the engine. They know what additives the vehicle needs for the engine to run better, longer as it gains mileage. It's like human beings. You ever go to the doctor as you get older and he gives you a calcium pill?
Yeah.
Hey, I didn't need that one. I didn't need that when I was 20. But you know what? You needed it at 50 or you needed it at 60, right? Because, you know, so it's the same thing. And that's really what motor oil is. Listen, when I took Motor Oil 101 years and years and years ago, one of the things the guy said to me was, I'll never forget this. He said, Ron, he goes, all oils basically start, it's like making chicken soup. It's the way mom made soup. You know, one guy makes chicken soup this way, one guy makes chicken soup that way. But they all start with the same base stock. It's the ingredients they put in the base stock that make each oil unique. And, you know, that's why I always say, people are always asking me, hey, what's the best oil? Oil's only as good as the engineering. And it's whoever's got the best engineering at that moment. And it does change in the marketplace, believe me when I tell you.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it really does. You know?
I run the Velvoline.
Okay.
530 high mileage, the synthetic, and it does use a quart every 3,000.
Right. Well,
I clean the PCV valve every time I change the oil. I change the oil every 4,000 to 5,000.
But now you know where the zinc's going to go, Nick. Because, you know, if it's burning the oil, like you say, if it's burning that quart, it's gonna get past the it's gonna get past whatever it's wherever it's leaking burning from. So you know, I would stay with what's rated for the vehicle, and you know, if you want to get a little more knowledge about high mileage and high mileage oils, get out to Castrol.com, see what they've got to say. But I think you're trying to do it right. I wouldn't venture from what you're doing. What you're doing is correct for the vehicle, and I think to do anything else is gonna make it worse. All right, kiddo, I gotta go. I'm up against the clock, and I appreciate your call, and thanks for calling in. Thanks for being part of the Car Doctor family. All right,
thank you all.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. You take good care. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We're back. Right after that. Welcome back, listeners. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, at your service as always. And, you know, one of the things we talk about on the show, and we constantly really talk about it, is safety. And there are some particular pattern failures that occur, even in the safety department, that come up in automobiles today. And I thought I would sit and talk to this gentleman that we're bringing on next. He's Chris Gillespie. He's the category director for Dorman Products. Chris has been around the toolbox for a few years, and he's got some interesting comments and thoughts about what we're going to touch on here. Chris, welcome aboard, sir.
Good day, Ron. How are you today?
I'm good. You know, steering shaft clunks, right? And I'm a mechanic now 40-something years, more years than I want to remember. And I see that, you know, you can tell you get in a vehicle and it's a variety of vehicles and you turn the wheel, parking lot maneuvers or coming out of a driveway, clunk, 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 clunk. It really is an unsettling feeling, right? There's more than a few vehicles on the road. You know, what is a steering shaft? Why does the listener have to be worried about it? Should they care? Does it matter?
Of course, this is a bigger problem that's coming. So essentially, a steering shaft is the main connection point between the vehicle's steering system and the steering column, and it's used to transfer the torque of the steering wheel to the wheel for steering the vehicle. So that clunking or binding that you're hearing, that's indicating a potential failure. It's going to seize. It's going to essentially the U-joint could break, but it's going to ultimately result in a loss of steering, which, let's be honest, is going to be problematic.
Well, so what you're saying is what they taught me 40-something years ago was the car needs three things: good tires, good brakes, and good steering suspension. It still applies.
Totally still applies. Yeah, it'll apply for many years to come.
Many years to come. So safety's at the top of the list then. The liability's huge, right? As far as, you know, your safety, your family's safety, being safe to the car next to you, you know, as far as driving down the road. So a company like Dorman comes along, and now you guys make a replacement steering shaft for so many cars. Talk about, you know, I'm curious, talk about how do you design that and bring that replacement part into the marketplace? How does that happen?
Well, this is a safety critical category. It is governed by FMVSS, the Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standards. There are a lot of certifications required to sell these parts. So we really take our time to review and understand that original steering system to ensure the functionality of our parts. There's torsional testing of the steering shaft. We try on many, many products onto many, many vehicles to make sure that proper fit is there. We're collapse testing. We're doing salt spray testing. These are all critical to make sure that part is of the highest quality. As well, we also have rigorous inline testing and quality control during the production process to ensure each part is made to our exact product specifications.
Talk about the collapse test a minute, Chris. And the reason I ask that is, you know, I've seen competitor steering shafts. You know, everybody goes, we'll go out to Amazon, we'll go out to different places online. And, you know, they'll be buying, I'll say it like it is, cheap overseas steering shafts that look the same as the OE, but they're different. Like the corrugated part is, it's funny, the cheap manufacturer overseas makes the part look like it'll collapse, but it doesn't. Obviously an issue.
Well, so if you're looking at how the steering system works, I've looked at doing the research for this category for many years now. To sit back and look at how these systems are designed to collapse by design, I think some of the most graphic pictures I've ever seen are when a steering shaft in the older vehicles would enter into the driver's compartment. It was scary, to say the least. And that part is designed to collapse on purpose, because if it doesn't, that steering shaft that you've been using to control your car as it careens down the road comes right in like a weapon. And it's actually quite serious. It's not a matter of, you know, possible injury. It's a matter of, hey, let's hope you survive.
Right, sure. Yeah.
Doing what it's supposed to do. We often see a lot of overseas competitors with, you know, the thought of, well, if we make the corrugation more rigid and actually design it to look corrugated but designed to last, that'll be a good thing. Well, it's not. Actually, essentially, you're creating a more robust weapon to come into that driver's compartment.
Right. Oh, and you know, that do you know what the biggest cause, this is kind of gory, but do you know the biggest cause of fatality in a 50s vehicle, a 50s and 60s vehicle, wasn't an accident?
I can imagine it was essentially akin to impalement.
Yeah, it was impalement. It was the steering shaft, because it would come straight up, and hence, therefore, this is all the design changes we're seeing now. A lot of what I think you're talking about, the collapse rate and, you know, breakaway and safety, a lot of that came about because of NASCAR. They studied how NASCAR cars survived the crash. They had to make it better and safer. And here we are. It's employed into the automobile industry, and you guys are taking advantage of that in a clear-cut manner. I think that's great.
We are trying to be a leader in that perspective, because this is, you know, this is someone that, as you alluded to at the start of our chat here today, this is you get behind the wheel, you have your family in the car. The last thing you need is an uninvited guest if something you know, catastrophic happens and you're in an accident. You don't need that steering column coming in.
So, let me ask you this question then. There's so many replacement auto parts. There's so many manufacturers out there. Tell me, talk to me about Dorman. If my mom was listening today, what would you tell her about Dorman that makes you guys so great? Because I know you are. How would she understand it?
Well, the first thing I would tell her is that, you know, Dorman's manufactured products and distributed automotive aftermarket products for over 100 years. There's a lot to be said about that. You know, our company provides more than 150,000 different products, spanning 185 plus product categories. That's a lot of repair opportunities on every vehicle. Dorman is committed to innovation, and we're engineering parts that are designed to be better alternatives than what you could find at your OE dealer.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny, you talk about finding things at an OE dealer. I had a 2003 Cadillac Seville the other day, and it needed the PCV tube and elbow had rotted out from time, and you know, just it was just old. It's, you know, 15, 16 years old now. And the OE no longer makes it. You can't buy that tube from GM. What do you do? It's a specific part. You know who made it. Dorman made it. And Dorman actually saved that job, saved that car. There was no other way to construct that piece. And I think that's a big niche that you bring to the marketplace as Dorman. You tend to look at the problem. Hey, you know, we need this. Nobody else makes it. Let's make it and see where it flies. And I think you take some chances, and I think you win a lot of the time. I think you win most of the time, actually. It's great stuff. You can look to Dorman. I often think of Dorman as you guys are like a small General Motors. You know, you make everything. You're just not quite sure where it is or what it is. It's. I've looked at the catalog. It's staggering how many parts you have and little, you know, idea savers and part savers and. You know, we're a little off topic here, but, you know, you get my point. One of the things I like, and let me just pat you on the back one more time, Chris, is I like how if you're looking for the widget, you don't have to buy the whole thing. You can just buy the one part that constantly goes bad and fails. And that's another thing that Dorman does, right?
Yeah, replace the piece rather than the whole assembly has become a real way of life. When it makes sense to offer the full part, we'll give you everything you need with that part. But sometimes, well, let's be honest, some of those parts in there are designed to last, but parts of that system is not. A perfect example on the PCV system, some of those rubber elbows in a really dry climate will dry rot after time and just start to allow air into the system, which is going to adversely affect performance.
Right.
So to have those replace the piece parts as well as the full system repairs, that's kind of what we do best, you know. I'll leave the manufacturing of cars to the OEs, but I can tell you that Dorman is a leader on making those parts that you're going to put back on the vehicle that much better.
Yeah, we were talking before our interview today about the Chevy Cruze, right? Look at what you did there. How many different pieces do you make for the Chevy Cruze that, you know, and listen, sometimes it's not just a cost factor of issue. I've had times where I've needed some of those parts that you've made for the Chevy Cruze. GM was out of stock. They were on back order, but you could get it from Dorman and, you know, get the car out the door and down the road. Everybody needs their car.
And the other side of that is it's not going to come back. We identified what went wrong and we made it better.
Right.
The intake on the Chevy Cruze is a perfect example. There was essentially a small PCV valve in the bottom of the intake. What happens over time, it would just get sucked into the intake system and it would adversely affect performance. So Dorman designed a part with a little T retainer in there to hold that PCV valve in place. And, you know, that car is not coming back 2 or 3 years down the road. You've got a satisfied customer that when that Chevy Cruze come back, it's not going to be for the intake.
Right. It's for something else, that's because it's a Chevy Cruze, not to beat up the Cruzes.
But, not to beat it up.
Not to beat it up. But let's call it like we see it. Hey, Chris, stay put. Let me pull over and take a pause. And when we return, we'll finish this conversation. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We're here today with Chris Gillespie from Dorman Products. We'll both be back right after this. And we are back, Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor, at your service once again. And I'm here today with Chris Gillespie. We've been having a conversation talking about, well, not just Dorman product. Chris is from Dorman. But we're talking about steering shaft safety, bringing parts to market, manufacturing. It's a litany of a conversation that was supposed to be about safety, but you put two gearheads together, and this is the kind of stuff that happens. Chris, tell us about, you know, I'm always curious, you know, people always ask me, hey, Ron, how'd you get started on radio? I'm always curious how companies get started. You know, talk to me about Dorman. Where did it start? And, you know, what makes Dorman the standout that it is?
Well, I think, you know, early part of our conversation, we were talking about, you know, what would happen if someone couldn't find the part for that car. Founded in 1918, you know, by two brothers, they very quickly realized that a lot of the basic parts that people needed to fix their cars were not always available. So they started a company selling these hard-to-find automotive hardware parts, but they got them from salvaged vehicles. You know, flash forward 100-and-some years now, we're in 2020, we've been continuously innovating new parts and solutions as well to really help people find those repairs they need to fix their vehicles. That's the biggest reason why, you know, anytime anyone asks me, this is why you would choose Dorman. It's just that commitment to making sure people can find what they need to fix their car.
Do you, just as an aside, Chris, I don't know if this is a company secret, but when you guys look at electric vehicles, have you talked about it? Do you, you know, you're going to be here obviously for electric vehicles. Do you look at it and say, where's the opportunity? Where's the moment where Dorman can do what they do so well in internal combustion engines?
Well, so that's a great question, first of all. I can tell you up front that, you know, there's still four tires, there's still all the safety systems, there's still all those parts that are going to fail. It's a different, if you will, engine, but and the powertrain's slightly different, but there still is going to be those parts, the door handles, the windshield wipers, the bushings that go in there, the things like steering shafts, all of these things that are still going to fail. There's still going to be a problem because as much as companies are looking to develop electronic vehicles, they need to be affordable. And sometimes, as we talked about just moments ago, those OEs are really good at manufacturing cars, but sometimes they get the best possible parts for the price that they need to hit to make the whole budget work. So
Right. We're
going to be there to make sure that the parts that you put back onto that car are the ones that are going to help keep it on the road that much longer.
So you guys have
including,
to...
you know, We're already doing hybrid batteries as well, so
that's what I wanted to hear.
No secret to what we can do.
Yeah, so you're talking about electric vehicles, and we'll leave it there. That's good.
Oh, we've been talking about electric vehicles for probably since they first started resonating through the halls of some of the big manufacturers.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Rest assured, we're going to have parts for them.
Oh. Chris, two questions before we go. Talk to me about the warranty that Dorman offers.
Well, Dorman offers a limited lifetime warranty on almost all of its parts. The steering shafts are no exception. It's when you buy that Dorman part, we want to make sure that our customer and that customer who's getting that part put on that car, they know that it's going to last. So we stand by every part, 100%.
Great. Hey, that's kind of amazing. Nobody else does that in the industry, I don't think. I think that's a standalone item. I believe that is, sitting here thinking about it. Great. Hey, Chris, where can the listeners go get more information?
Listeners can go to dormantproducts.com, and they can search for, we can talk steering shafts, or we can talk any other number of 150,000 parts they're looking for, and they can make sure that they type that into the search bar and find what they need. On that website, you'll find some great product details, some helpful videos, and more importantly, you'll be able to make sure that the part you buy fits your vehicle.
Hey, that's great. An online catalog. Chris, I want to thank you for taking the time. I know how busy you are out of the course of your day, and we really appreciate you being here. Maybe we can get you back again in the future. I'm sure there's lots of topics you and I can talk about and bring to the listeners' ears. All right, buddy?
All right, Ron. Thank you so much. You have a great day.
You too. You're very welcome. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, Ron and Annie and the Car Doc. Just want to say thank you again to the folks at Dorman Products. Find more information about them and their products and their testing procedures and what they go through. It's not easy to bring auto parts to the aftermarket, or to the automotive market, I should say, and you know, make them work. And they do. They do a great job at it. You'll find more information at DormanProducts.com. Thanks, everybody, that stopped by the garage today. I really enjoyed talking to each and every one of you. Keep in mind, diagnostics are the tip of the spear. It's very important that we maintain good diagnostic procedure. I can't expound on that enough and continue to point out that test what's good so you'll know what's bad. That's the Car Doctor's mantra. Till the next time, I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, reminding each and every one of you, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See you.